This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and it is that time of year. The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out right now. 345 pages of greatness, and you can get it at VSiN.com/subscribe. And one of the many authors and a gentleman you know here on this podcast and on VSiN is Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT joins us right now. JVT, you were tasked with the SEC and the Mountain West. How was that endeavor? Going through the SEC is not an easy one.
No, and actually, that's the one I kind of enjoyed the most because, as you know, and for our audience, usually my assignments have been Big 12 and the Mountain West. Mountain West has always kind of been my jam, both college basketball and, of course, college football. I haven't covered UNLV for a while and still doing it part-time. So that's always kind of generally easy to fall back on some basic knowledge, understanding of the programs, things like that. But I thought the SEC was a ton of fun. You know, a region and a conference that we know just from a national perspective, but diving in, you know, sifting through message boards and reporters and trying to find some different stuff. I actually really enjoyed the task quite a bit. And, you know, you really do feel prepared. I mean, how many teams is it? I can't remember. 17 now or whatever it is. 16.
Yeah.
So, you know, you feel like, hey man, knocked out the Mountain West, knocked out the SEC. I got a good chunk of knowledge in my brain here about these teams are going to be watching in just less than a month.
Yeah. And there's no doubt. And when you look at JVT's best bets, oddly enough, they are both SEC and Mountain West driven. So it's funny how that works. For those who don't know, of course, you know JBT, but it bears repeating. I wouldn't be a good host for not saying it. He and Stormy Bonantoni every weekday, Money Moves, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and Pod to the Futures, JBT and Mitch Moss. So we'll start with the SEC. We'll finish with the Mountain West. And I want to ask your thoughts on just this futures board, because a couple episodes ago, I started the pod with a best bet and I took Georgia to win the conference at plus 320. Now you look around, there's different numbers out there. They're as low as I think plus 260 Georgia. There's some shops that have Texas as the favorite in this conference. So JVT, after you wrapped up your breakdown of this conference, was it clear-cut Texas, Georgia, or do you see another team potentially looking as a contender to win this conference?
Yeah, so I think to answer the first question, I think that Georgia should be considered the favorite, maybe with Texas, but I like your tact here. Like pricing-wise, they should at the very least be a co-favorite to win this conference. So if you're going to take over 3-1 on Georgia to win this thing, I think that's a fair bet to make because I would make them shorter. If you look at the returning production, obviously we know what Gunnar Stockton is, but it seems like at skill position, specifically offensive line and running back, you should be a lot better than you were last year. They weren't the most efficient rushing attack a season ago. They finished 2025 in the 32nd percentile in explosive of run rate, 54th percentile and early down success rate. Stockton was largely forced to kind of save him on third and longs a lot of the time. And so if you can run the ball better, which it looks like on paper they can, this is going to be an offense that I think is going to be much better. I think you have some concerns defensively about Georgia. Pass rush-wise, last year, only 20 sacks. And they brought in that kid from Auburn, but then he tears his ACL in the spring. So that's going to be a small problem that they still have to figure out. But outside of that, I think this Georgia team deserves to be the status of favorite. So if you're going to play that number, I think it makes sense. To answer the second part of your question, if you're going a little bit deeper, where I landed on was, if you're going to give me near 9-1 in Alabama to win this conference, I think that's the bet to make. You know, I know a lot of this really hinges on the development and emergence of Keelan Russell, but I'm going to kind of believe in Kalen DeBoer at this point to bring him along, because the one thing I know about Alabama, Tim, is their defense is actually going to be pretty good. You know, last year it was a top 30 defense in a lot of different advanced metrics and whatnot, and that was at the bare minimum. They bring back about 7 guys on this defense, so I expect I'm going to have one of the better units in the SEC. It's just whether or not Russell's going to work out and whether or not they're going to be able to run the ball. One of the things that the Crimson Tide were awful at last year was running the football. They averaged just 3.4 yards per carry, 132nd in rush success rate last year, 18th percentile in rush EPA per play, and the 6th percentile in explosive run rate. They just couldn't generate anything on the ground. But Russell's presence should help that. He's an athlete, so he should be able to run the ball a little bit more. Having an athlete at quarterback opens things up. The offensive line's like brand new, essentially, but I think I kind of like that, right? I mean, the offensive line last year kind of stunk. So I think if you can get Russell to come along, if you get this offensive line to get more push, and all of a sudden you're looking at a running game that provides some balance, I think you got an Alabama team that's pretty formidable. I know the schedule presents some challenges, but I think that they're a national championship contender. And so at plus 850 to win the SEC, I think there is value in that number for Alabama.
I'm glad you brought up Alabama, because there's been differing opinions all year long on this podcast, which I love. I love hearing Phil Steele thinks they're the number one surprise team in college football, and he equates that to a team outside of the preseason top 10. But you hear from a Brad Powers, you hear from a Brett Ciancia, both are a little bit down on Alabama. So their win total is 8.5. It's not a best bet that you wrote up for the guide, but when you look at this Alabama team this year, to dive a little bit deeper into it, you know, they open up with East Carolina, massive favorite there, at Kentucky, and then they get that revenge game against Florida State, and then you jump into it. You have Georgia at home, you've got Tennessee in that rivalry game on October 17th. The stretch in the middle of the season is really challenging here this year for Alabama. So 8.5 is the win total. As you look at it, you think this Alabama team is probably more inclined to look at that 9-10 range as opposed to 7 or 8?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you're looking at what they could potentially be, and you mentioned their opponents too, the good things is, I think if I remember correctly, they avoid Texas and Ole Miss on the schedule, so that's not going to be part of it for them. You do have to face Georgia and Texas A&M, but you get to host both of them, so that's going to be a pretty good option for you too, if we're talking about that regard, potentially pulling those off. Also, like, I don't know how you feel about this, but I consider Texas A&M a little bit more of a winnable game than I think than most. I'm not as high on Texas A&M as I think a lot of people are, just in the landscape of them being, like, you know, better than Alabama in the SEC. We can get to that if you want to. And then we'll see what LSU becomes. But I do think they're kind of flying under the radar, and I think some of those contests are a little bit more winnable than we initially expect. So I do think that the high upside could hit, and you're looking at potentially over a win total for the guide. I went over 8.5 even money. We have to write up every single win total for every single one of these teams, and that was my selection for Alabama.
So let's get to the most polarizing team in this conference. And you could argue it's Texas. And, you know, we had Brett McMurphy in studio on VSiN Primetime Tuesday night. He was at SEC Media Days, and he felt like, you know, Texas, there's a lot of confidence down there. But to me, you can't talk polarization in this conference without going to LSU. With everything that went out, firing Brian Kelly, bringing in Lane Kiffin the way that they did, you're looking at a win total of 8.5. And once again, love the differing opinions. I know Paul Stone, very high on LSU. He likes them to make the college football playoff at plus 160. Handful of other folks that have been on this pod this summer have said, I like under 8.5 wins for LSU, including Chris Felica. So 8.5 is the win total for LSU. Before we dive into that, you know, what do you like? What do you have concerns about regarding this LSU team?
I mean, I think the number one concern has got to be Levitt's health, right? I mean, he wasn't available for spring for LSU, and you look at him, 20 games at Arizona State, 61% of his passes completed, 34 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Obviously, we know about the run in 2024, so we know about that. But a Liz Frank injury is somewhat, I think, worrisome when you're talking about just a quarterback and just athlete in general, so you wonder if that's going to look particularly good. They get off to maybe a slow start just because he wasn't available in the spring. Mental reps can only get you so far, and fall camps are pretty short. Man, like, you don't really get a ton of time. I'll invoke UNLV really quickly. You know, Paul Gunther, the defense coordinator, last year took over right at the start of the spring game because their defensive coordinator suddenly had to resign. They talked all year about how he couldn't install something properly, and he got started in the spring. So what's an athlete in terms of a quarterback going to be limited to when you're talking about not being available for spring and just getting your feet on the ground out there when you're talking about the fall camp? So I do wonder about that. What I'm really curious about is Lane Kiffin in terms of leader of men and pulling things together. Because one of the things that I'm going to be wrong about, if they are wrong, is they are very talented. They had the best transfer class of 2026, according to 247. Is it 247 or 24/7?
I call it 247.
Okay, that's what I thought. But outside of Levitt, you had two other five-star transfers coming out there to Baton Rouge. Princewell, whatever his last name is, from Ole Miss, the defensive lineman. I'm not going to give it a shot. But he's going to be very good. Five other defensive linemen are in the class as well. Like, they're really kind of retooling this team defensively. But it's just that, right? It's transfers and retooling and re-upping, especially on defense. And I think there's a chance that some of the names that you bring in and some of the rebuilding position groups, specifically on defense, maybe struggle a little bit more than we expect them to when you're talking about splitting hairs for a team that's got a win total that they do and national championship aspirations. And I think ultimately that's where I came with LSU. You know, we could talk about the 8.5 under minus 105. That's what I wrote up. But look at their schedule: Alabama, Texas, Texas A&M. All three of those teams do have to make the trip to the Death Valley, but you also have to go to Oxford to face Ole Miss in an emotionally charged game at the beginning of the year. You've got to get Clemson, which some people I think are relatively high on, especially with the change of quarterback. And I got to tell you, Tim, I don't think road trips to Auburn and Tennessee are going to be circle wins. Like, I think Tennessee's intriguing, especially on offense. And then Auburn, I think, has some real strong upside too. So I think there's a chance that LSU finds its way into some traps and maybe ends up laying an egg and by the demands of the fan base and only gets to about 8 wins this year.
Yeah, it's funny, the, you know, I hate using the word narrative, but the narrative is, oh, they're going to make the playoff. They have to do it. I think Feinbaum's been throwing that out there, which, you know, take what you will with him. But look, if they have eight wins and they're heading in the right direction, you know, Lane Kiffin has proven that he's a pretty good coach and he could build this thing up. So I think it's not the sky is falling if they go 8-4 this year, which I think is, as you mentioned, you look at the schedule, how about the back end of September at Ole Miss, like you alluded to, that is going to be, in my opinion, the biggest, most anticipated game of the college football season, regular season wise. And then you go and play Texas A&M. So let's get to Ole Miss, because Ole Miss, I mentioned polarizing. Obviously, LSU with everything there, there's a lot of intrigue there. But then you look at this Ole Miss team, and I'm having a hard time formulating a proper opinion on Ole Miss JVT, because I love Trinidad Chambliss. I rank him as the best quarterback returning in college football this year, just for what he does with his legs as well as through the air. But I'm not going to bet him to win the Heisman Trophy, even though he certainly could put up massive numbers. The number is short for him to win the Heisman Trophy, and I don't know if they're going to win enough games. And I do have some concerns about Pete Golding. Like, you had everything, I won't say going right, because they lost Lane Kiffin. They would have preferred to keep him, but you had this kind of momentum at us against the world. And now it calms down a little bit. Now you're in charge. And, you know, once again, you look at the schedule. Week one, I think that is a fascinating game in Nashville against Louisville. I'm looking to bet Louisville. I want a full 7. Right now it's 6.5 after some sharp money came in. You've got the LSU game. I think we can chalk up a loss in a letdown spot at Florida. I think that's going to be really challenging there. But you look up and down that schedule. You got Georgia. You've got a road trip to Oklahoma. You got Texas. So as you dove into this Ole Miss team, what did you come away thinking about the Rebels under Pete Golding in 26?
Yeah, under Pete Golding and under on the win total, I think is the way that this is going to go for Ole Miss. And let's put it frankly, Pete Golding did a very good job of rallying this team. But I think the most fascinating question is going to be what Trinidad Chambliss is. I think he is very good. He also had Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. on his sideline and in his head with those play calls the entire way, right? Weiss Jr. decided to stick around for that playoff run, but now all of a sudden you're looking at John David Baker, former offensive coordinator at East Carolina, coming in and calling plays. That does matter, right? Chambliss, I think, is really good at taking care of the football, and he is a very skilled and talented quarterback. But when you're talking about a difference in play calling, you know, different flow, different terminology, he was even asked about that at SEC Media Day and had some kind of a weird answer. It's like, hey, you know, we're trying to keep some of the things the same. Like, I think there's going to be some real growing pains there. The talent is there on offense, but a change at play caller, I think, is a really big deal for Ole Miss coming into this year. And then the other side, you know, I mentioned it, right? You're losing defensive talent that are going out to Baton Rouge in LSU. And I think that's going to make a difference here for Golding. And on top of all of this, we're looking at a group that does have that really challenging schedule, as you mentioned. Don't sleep on spots either, Tim. Like, look, Missouri might be like one of the better offenses in the country. That might be a really tough spot. And by the way, sneaky revenge spot for Simmons, right? Taking on his old group. Yep. So we'll see if that actually manifests in something. But you've got to take on Georgia. You've got to take on Louisville at the start of the year. There's some Florida, you mentioned it, Texas, Oklahoma. There's some really challenging spots on the schedule for a team that's got some big changes and some pretty big situations. So I think, you know, under 7.5 plus 130, the markets, and that to me is what really got me was the pricing, really heavily shaded to the over at 7.5 over at DraftKings. If you're going to give me plus 130 or better on under 7.5, I think that is a very good play to make. I think 7.5 is a fair win total, but I think that should be more like pick, minus 110 both ways, as opposed to heavily shaded to the over, the expectation largely being like 7.8-ish wins. I think you're still sitting flat at like 7.5 or maybe just under it.
Look at you talking about revenge spots. That makes it brings a tear to my eye, JVT. All those nights of me talking about it on primetime have paid off. But no, that, you know, that it's so funny because I do an exercise every offseason looking at our spots. And I mentioned, you know, Ole Miss, the week after they play that emotionally charged game, they got to go to the Swamp and play Florida. I'm like, circling Florida right there. What's that price going to be? But I thought you made a good point about Austin Simmons. That might be forgotten about, that he's at Missouri now. He's a guy that was thought to be the guy at Ole Miss. He gets hurt. They turn their attention to Trinidad Chambliss. Let's do kind of some quick hitters, and you can expand as much as you want. We've got a bunch of new coaches. Obviously, one of them is Pete Golding. But You know, you got Arkansas with Silverfield. You've got Auburn with Golish. You've got Summerall at Florida. Will Stein at Kentucky. We talked about Lane at LSU. So when you look at some of these new head coaches in the SEC this year, we'll start with Arkansas. Very uninspiring hire. I thought it was a terrible hire. I thought Ryan Silverfield, people have heard me talk about it, he did less with more at Memphis. They were the most well-funded program in that conference, and they always seemed to under-deliver. So when they hired him in Arkansas, I'm like, man, that's the best you can do. And I know they tried some other pieces as well. Arkansas was the best two-win team in the history of college football last year. I mean, it felt like they lost every game by like 3 or 4 points in conference play. Any reason to be optimistic about Arkansas this year?
I don't think so. And you know, it's funny because we talk again about the pricing. The win total is 4.5. Under's like -166. And that was my recommendation. I don't really see a scenario in which they're going to be that much better. And I'm with you. And I even noted in the write-up, and I was surprised because I go in with blank slates on all of these things, trying to learn a little bit more. And I put in the intro for it, Silverfield, he never won the AAC, which is not that big of a deal. He never even made it to the conference title game, which I thought was really surprising, given the step up and the job that he just got. But he did win 50 games. He won 4 bowls. So I guess that does matter to an extent. But I'm with you in that, you know, you see some of these guys that are getting these jobs. We'll talk about Golish coming up in a little bit. You see, like, the immense success that they had. And I just don't really buy that that's going to be something that's going to happen here. I don't know what KJ Jackson's really going to be. I went back and watched some of them a little bit, but, you know, it's a small sample size. So you wonder if that's going to be anything that's going to really push forward. I know they got the kid, AJ Hill, coming in from Memphis. So maybe we see both of them at some point. But the large expectation is that Jackson's going to be there. And then how much can you really expect this defense to improve? I mean, they gave up 33, 34 points per game, 6.3 yards per play. They've really tried to revamp this whole thing. But outside of Quincy Rhodes sticking around, there's really nothing much there for this team defensively. I think that Silverfield, with a solid offensive background, might be able to push this team forward. But you look at the schedule too, Tim. I mean, Utah, Texas A&M, Texas, Georgia, LSU. I mean, what are the winnable spots? I even put it in the rundown, in the guide. I was like, I don't know, Tulsa, Missouri, South Carolina. Like, there's just not that many that you're really hoping they can pull off here. Maybe they're a good ATS team, but I just don't think that they're going to get to those 5+ wins.
I tell you what, that September 26th game against Tulsa, talk about a brutal spot. You go out to Salt Lake City, it's the late night game. Then you come back home and you have a body blow war against Georgia. And then on October 3rd, you go to College Station to take on Texas A&M. Oh, in the meantime, you got to take on Tulsa, which I'm sure those players won't give a you-know-what about. So, like, I don't know what that number is going to be. I'm certainly going to be tempted to take points with Tulsa in that September 26th spot. All right, a team that you did write up from a win total over is Auburn. They bring in Alex Golish, and I would say, more importantly, they have his quarterback follow him in Byron Brown, and there's a lot of excitement regarding Brown. They open up the season at Baylor. Win total right now for Auburn, as I pull it up just to get the accurate pricing, is 6.5, -15. If you want to, you know, lay heavy juice over 5.5, is -270. But when you look at this Auburn team, you are buying in on Alex Golish heading to the Plains.
Yeah, man, I'm in. Like, I'm ready to be hurt, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But, you know, it's one of those things where I always put it this way. You understand Byron Brown was good, and then you put into context and you actually see his numbers, over 4,200 total yards, over 40 touchdowns. Like, the guy was incredible with what he was able to do for USF. But what really got me was the production that they bring around here with him. You get some wide receivers with you from South Florida, Jeremiah Cogard, Kayshon Singleton. These guys were absolutely fantastic. Jeremiah Cobb, one of the few holdovers on the offense here coming back, is a really good back too. I think all of these pieces fit together, and I keep giving Stormy credit for this because I thought it was a good point by her, so I stole it and wrote it up, which was, but you know, the retention of DJ Durkin. Like, DJ Durkin's a good defensive coordinator, and they retain some talent here. Auburn's actually been a good defensive group under Durkin. You know, last year, for example, 20.7 points per game, 2.9 yards per carry. The first two seasons, they've allowed under fewer than 5 yards per play. I really do think that this is going to be a group that's going to surprise some people, and Durkin's going to be a big part of it too. So to me, over 6.5 is worth taking the risk on here for Auburn. You know, the schedule, you should talk about it, but they avoid both Texas teams. You get to face Georgia, Ole Miss, and Alabama in conference play, so that's going to be relatively difficult. But home schedule is more than manageable, I think, for them to get to those 7+ wins.
Well, and I think, too, when you look at, looking at win totals like in Auburn, the start of the season, you get 4 straight games not on the road, right? You played Baylor in Atlanta, so you'll have the home field advantage, so to speak, there. Southern Miss, Florida, Vanderbilt, all at home. you could chalk up two losses, that's fine, but you get LSU at home, Arkansas at home, you do have to go to Mississippi State. So, no, I'm certainly intrigued by them. Let's get to Florida and your takeaway of John Summerall coming in there. Leaves Tulane, made some waves. He was certainly, as Brett McMurphy said on Tuesday night on primetime, definitely won the press conference, and it was a runaway at media days down there. So what does that mean? I don't know. But you really got a win total 6.5, 7.5, depending on what juice you want to lay here. Any interest on this Florida team here in 26?
I mean, I think it's interest in the sense of, like, Summerall has been great, and that was one of my burning questions for the guy. Does his magic translate to the SEC? I mean, everything he's touched has been gold. Troy was 15-20 in the three previous seasons. Then he goes 23-5, wins the Sun Belt twice. He goes to Tulane, gets them to 20 wins in two seasons in the college football playoff. So, yeah, every time he goes somewhere new, he immediately gets them to a winning program. But this is the SEC. It's a little bit different when you're talking about the level of competition that you're facing. And I just wonder, too, outside of Auburn, right? Auburn, it is a guy who has had success at a lower level that is moving up, but he brings some fancy toys with him, including Brown. For Florida, you're kind of starting from scratch. They bring in this Aaron Filo kid from Georgia Tech. They also bring in an offensive coordinator. So there is going to be some continuity there. Two guys that have been together since they were out there at Georgia Tech. But I do wonder if there is going to be some bumpy roads early on. And Filo's pretty talented, 4-star kid when he was coming out, according to 247. But I do think there's going to be something there where maybe Summerall is going to be good game to game. Maybe he's going to be good bet on team. But you have to host Ole Miss. You have to host Oklahoma. Those are going to be hard games, but at least you get to host them. They have to go to Auburn. They have to go to Texas. I do wonder what that's going to look like. And remember, too, for your audience, I'm sure you've pointed this out 1,000 times, the cocktail party is just slightly more difficult because that's in Atlanta this year. It's not Jacksonville. So that's going to be somewhat difficult, too. So you've got some easy wins on the schedule, FAU, Campbell, and Florida State. But I do wonder if there's some other opportunities to really get this team. And again, the pricing, too, or at least the win total, 7.5. You got to get to 8 wins. I feel like 7 wins seems to be a pretty good ceiling for Florida this year.
Anything that you really want to note regarding Will Stein in Kentucky? He takes over there. So the only other new coach that we haven't hit on, what do you expect from Kentucky? Obviously, very low win total there in the Bluegrass State.
Yeah, I think really I would defer to you, as I'm just going to be curious, like everybody else, is he going to continue to work his quarterback magic here with Minshew? Because Minshew's a pretty talented kid, from what I understand, looking at what he had done there, former 4-star as well. But about the track record here for Stein in terms of the quarterbacks he's worked with, especially over there at Oregon, and there's a lot of guys that were good college football quarterbacks, and some of them have gone on to the National Football League. So that, to me, is going to be the biggest question. If Minshew can come in and Stein can continue to do what he needs to do from a quarterback development standpoint, that's going to be huge. But I will point out, it's different when you're the offensive coordinator and quarterback guy, right? When you just have to worry about those things. Now you are the head coach. You are the CEO. There are other things you have to worry about. Will he be able to develop Minshew the way that he was able to develop some of these other guys, I think, is going to be my big question. I think, for what it's worth, what did I put here in the win total? Over 4.5 minus 148. I'm kind of buying in on the offensive prowess that if Minshew should be able to thrive here. And I don't think the schedule's brutal. Like, it does get Texas A&M and Oklahoma on the road, but it doesn't face Georgia, Texas, or Ole Miss this season. They get to host Alabama. And then mid-tier SEC foes, we'll call them, Vandy, Tennessee, South Carolina, Missouri, all at home, all on the schedule too. So if the upside hits, you could probably get to 5 wins if you're Kentucky.
Yeah, and to talk a little bit more about Kenny Minshew, obviously I didn't cover Notre Dame. I don't cover them, but I know the program quite well. And, I talked about Lincoln Kienholz going to Louisville, why I was excited there, JBT, because of Jeff Brohm and his track record with quarterbacks. And he was reportedly right there in a competition with Julian Sain a year ago. Mm-hmm. Same could be said for Kenny Minshew. When the announcement came out about a year ago, middle of camp, it was a bit of a surprise because the reports were that Minshew was outplaying CJ Carr. And go back a little bit further. Kenny Minshew was the reason Steve Angeli transferred to Syracuse. They were going to try to shorten that race from 3 down to 2. And most people thought, all right, it's going to be Angeli versus Carr. And Minshew beat out Angeli, and he ended up leaving for Syracuse. So there's a lot of curiosity, and everything that people have said about him coming out of South Bend is obviously glowing. So, I think you look at him, too. He committed to Nebraska, and then when Will Stein got the Kentucky job, he quickly flipped to Kentucky. So, I think upside, just from an intrigue standpoint. Speaking of quarterback transfers, 2 years ago, everybody could not stop talking about John Mateer and Oklahoma and him going down there with Ben Arbuckle. And You know, I get a lot of things wrong. I think I was right on Mateer. I'm like, let's pump the brakes just a little bit here. And look, yeah. He got hurt and it kind of derailed the whole season there. There's a lot of differing opinions on Oklahoma. And I mentioned Brett Cianci, who does the Pick Six preview, and he was on this podcast. He is super bullish on Oklahoma. He has them tied for second with Texas preseason. Wow. I think that's a little aggressive, but hey, Brett's got a pretty good track record of sniffing these things out. Obviously, we know how good this defense is. What can John Mateer do this year, full off season? He obviously bulked up. He's a big dude right now. So what are you expecting year two of Mateer and Arbuckle down in Norman?
Yeah, I would echo your sentiments, you know, and I wanted to come into these guides, and I do try to flush everything. So I wanted to come in here and be like, I told you, John Mateer is really not that great. But as I put in the guide this year, you know, it would be foolish to ignore the clear line of demarcation when you're talking about his season, right? He starts the year, he completes 67% of his passes, he averages 8.5 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 8.5 yards on the average depth of target downfield, and they get off to an undefeated start. They're great. Then he gets hurt. And then everything kind of falls off, completes less than 60% of his passes, averages only 6.4 yards per attempt through 8 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. So, like, clearly there is a cataclysmic event, and then there is a downfall in play that we should acknowledge here. But as I put in the rundown, in the guide, Tim, one of the things that a injured hand does not change is your decision-making. And from when he came back from that injury to the end of the season, he led the SEC in turnover-worthy plays. He put the ball in danger a ton. And so if he is not going to improve in that regard, then I'm not really going to trust that that's going to be something that this is going to work out for them. But I'll say this too, and I think this is going to be the interesting angle of what they do with Mateer. One of the things that was shocking, I thought, to me, both watching last year and then going back over the numbers, they did not run him anywhere near as effectively as he did when he was at Washington State. You forget that he was a 1,000-yard rusher at Washington State. And then last year, and the way I thought this was the most damning stat, he only had 15 fewer attempts on the ground last year than he did his last season at Washington State, and he ran for nearly 500 fewer yards. They were wildly ineffective in running the football. Some of that has to do with the offensive line. Some of that has to do with Mateer, and some of that has to do with Torrey Blalock, his offensive coordinator, whose name is escaping me right now. Blalock is the leading rusher. Thank you, Dan Arbuckle. And the play calling, right? Arbuckle's got to be better. And so that to me is going to be, I think, the big deciding factor. If Mateer is the runner and the athlete that he was at Washington State, then I think the upside hits with this team. The defense is incredible, and you're looking at a group that can maybe win the SEC, get back to the college football playoff, maybe even win a game. But to me, it's all about that. I know we're going to talk a lot about Mateer, his health, and his ability to throw the ball, but if he's not going to be a near 1,000-yard rusher or at least a guy that can be that effective, then I don't think this offense is going to be anywhere near what they want it to be.
All right, so last year, as I mentioned, Mateer was kind of that popular, hey, I watched this guy at Washington State. I'm going to bet him to win the Heisman. Now, his odds did drop right after they beat Michigan. I think he was around 9-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. And we see these movements all the time in the market. And that's why people should watch and listen to back Pod to the Future, because it's kind of a fun discussion of where we're at from the futures market. So as we look at the Heisman market, and we just did an extensive episode with Dustin last week, breaking down the Heisman market, looking at the quarterbacks this year in the SEC, you know, you've got Arch. He's at, I'm using DraftKings, plus 750. Then you go down to Trinidad, 13-1. Gunnar Stockton, 19-1. Sam Levitt, 20-1. Marcel Reed, we haven't even mentioned him. He's at 25-1. Mateer, 28-1. Keelon Russell, 28-1. Byron Brown at 50-1. Lenore Sellers, 40-1, who was, once again, a guy we haven't mentioned yet. He was kind of the talk of college football a year ago. Is there a quarterback in the SEC you'd like to back right now to win the Heisman Trophy?
I think it is Byron Brown. So if I'm already somebody who thinks they can go over their win total, so I'm expecting, you know, 7+ wins. So if the upside hits for Auburn and they come storming in and get a surprise season, then I think that you're talking about Byron Brown having a very strong year. As we mentioned, he's a dual threat guy. He can provide both on the ground and through the air, Tim. So he gives you the sexy, you know, EA Sports kind of stats that a Heisman Trophy winner would very much like to use as part of their resume to win the trophy. Talk about the number two at, 50-1, as you mentioned. I think if you're playing someone, I think it would be Byron Brown. And given the production that he's got around him, again, too, we should note not only his goal this year and Byron Brown, his offensive coordinator is there as well. So this offense, like, they're just all wearing different uniforms. That's why my burning question was, can USF win the SEC? Because, like, they're all just kind of changing clothes and then going out there and playing together. And I think that's going to be something that really does work in their favor. So out of all of them, I think Brown, to me, is going to be the guy worth playing at that number.
All right, so quick hitter before we wrap up in the SEC, because JVT also wrote up the Mountain West. We'll get in some best bets there on the other side of a quick break. So we have not hit on Mississippi State, Missouri. We have not hit on South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt. Of those teams, what kind of jumped out to you, whether it be positive or negative, and maybe you are a little bit against the grain when it comes to your opinion on them?
Yeah, I think so. Two stick out to me. First off, I really like Tennessee. Over 7.5 wins. The returning production is freaking crazy. And that was one, too, where we opened up talking about not knowing much about the SEC. And so, like, I know a little bit about Tennessee, but I haven't followed the program. And then you really get into the minutia of what they've got coming back here. This is awesome. Their offensive line's largely intact. I know a lot of people expect that they're going to be Joe Moore Award, potential winners here, or at least contenders. Three of the four top receivers from last season are back. Deshaun Bishop is back. Heupel, since he's taken over the program, Tim, has averaged at least 31.8 points per game on offense in his time there. He's also, I didn't realize this with Heupel too, he's got a pretty steady hand when you're talking about his ability to win games. They've won at least 8 in 4 straight years. Like, they've been pretty solid under him. The only question is Faison Brandon, the expected starting quarterback, true freshman. Is he going to hit the ground running? But I think the floor is so high with this offense that he is going to be put in a position to succeed. And then the other side, look, you lose a lot of talent, especially on the defensive line. But the linebacking core, I know the one kid just got suspended for the first two games, but the linebacking core is really strong. You bring in Penn State's leading tackler, and you bring in Jim Knowles, who should be able to coach this team up pretty well. I came away really impressed with Tennessee and think over 7.5 is definitely worth looking at. And I'll say the negative really quickly. I did think that Vandy under their win total of 5.5 at +110 was definitely worth looking at. I'm not really buying in what this offense is going to look like here. You have to replace Pavia. It's a 5-star true freshman is the expectation that's going to take over here. And maybe he's going to come in and hit the ground running. I believe it's Jared Curtis is the name. But I think that that's going to be a pretty big problem for an offense that really relied on Pavia's success last year. And I think their schedule's pretty tough too. So Tennessee very high on over the win total of 7.5. And I think under 5.5 +110, I'll be pessimistic on this team as well for the Vanderbilt Commodores. And I think that they're going to go under that number. I mean, too, by the way, road games in conference, Auburn, Georgia, Florida, they have to host Ole Miss, Alabama, Tennessee. I mean, as somebody who's also high on Tennessee and then low on Vandy, that also works too. Because if I'm right, then I'm going to get a win in the pocket.
Yeah, it is always great when you have those win totals going head-to-head at some point. And if you get that one, it's so massive. And I'm glad you brought up Tennessee because I feel like – I don't want to say I have a great feel on all 16 of these teams, but the team I feel – one of the teams I feel the least confident about is Tennessee. And I'm glad you had that strong opinion about them. However, I will call Faison Brandon Brandon Faison about 1,000 times.
Dude, I know.
But, I mean, it drives me crazy. So can we figure out a way to petition him not to go by Faison Brandon?
I should note because for some reason, the video of Tennessee got caught up in some Tennessee fan circles and in the internet, and they enjoyed it because I went like ham on how they're going to go over the win total. We should note, as many of them pointed out, remember, they got Indiana strength and conditioning coach. So that should be pointed out for all the volunteer fans.
Yeah. Once you get sucked into those rabbit holes, man, you can either be loved or hated beyond belief there. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, JVT also wrote up, let's be honest, his favorite conference, the Mountain West. We'll dive into some of his best bets. There it is, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. My guest today, JVT, at me, JVT on Twitter, co-host of Money Moves, Pod to the Future as well, and Moonlights for ESPN Radio here in Las Vegas. He's a Las Vegas native. So the Mountain West is always near and dear to his heart. And, you know, let's start with the big picture for the group of six this year, because JVT, when you look at the futures market of who's going to make the college football playoff, it's no surprise. It's Boise State is the betting favorite to make the college football playoff. And maybe it's because of the Pac-12. I am not that high on the Pac-12. Fresno State is intriguing this year. But then you get into the Mountain West teams, and that's where UNLV's at 10-1. You go a little bit further down the board. You've got a New Mexico at 13-1, North Dakota State at 15-1. you know, obviously we're overlooking the American a little bit, the Sun Belt, but when you think about the group of six this year and who will represent that portion of the college football playoff, is there a team that jumped out to you, at least from an odds standpoint, that you think is worth maybe playing a future on?
Yeah, but it's in neither the Pac-12 or the Mountain West. I mean,
all right.
I mean, could potentially Memphis pull this off? I think that's going to be an interesting one.
They've got
one.
The firepower. I mean, look at their schedule, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you, but like week zero, they go to UNLV. And then week two, they go to Boise. So they have an opportunity to knock off both of arguably the two top dogs, if you will, in the P6, the G6, I beg your pardon. So, yeah, Memphis is intriguing with Charles Huff going there and taking over for Silverfield, because once again, we already talked about Ryan Silverfield. Yeah, right. I think that is a big upgrade in coaching.
Yeah, and I mean, you said it. That to me is what makes it intriguing about Memphis, is they have the opportunity to knock off two of their bigger competitors should they be in the mix for that spot in the college football playoff. So the head-to-head and the scheduling works really nicely. Like you said, it's when we were talking about this off the other day, you know, interesting kind of round robin deal when you look at the way that schedule breaks down. And look, I being out here, going out to camp, covering the team a little bit, I'm of the mindset, and I've talked to some people around the program too about this, I think that UNLV's expectations and reality are not on the same level. I think UNLV is going to have a solid season, but I think a good year for UNLV this season is going to be 8-4. And I obviously don't think that's going to be good enough to get you into a college football playoff berth, unless just the group of six is abhorrent, which I don't think is going to be the case. You're going to have a better representative. So I want to knock off UNLV in that regard. And I think Boise State offers some intrigue, a lot of returning production. We know that Danielson in that group is going to be pretty competent almost every single time out. I believe everybody keeps complaining about a lot of these old quarterbacks. Is Maddox Madsen is still playing quarterback for Boise State?
He is.
Don't understand how that works. I do think he's a little bit more flawed as a passer than we think, only because he's been there for a while. We assume he's good, but turnover-worthy plays have been a little bit of a bugaboo for him. But running back production is awesome. Defensive and offensive line is great for Boise State. So in a bad conference, I'd be stunned if they didn't win it. But I think, to me, the pecking order, if we're talking about these groups, I'd play Memphis. It would then be Boise State. And then I would look elsewhere in the Mountain West, and I just don't even think the Mountain West is going to have a true shot at representing it, just because I think these four or five teams, you know, Hawaii, New Mexico, Air Force, UNLV, we'll throw North Dakota State in on the back end. I think they're all just going to cannibalize each other, Tim. I think they're all pretty even to one another.
Yeah, I think Boise State, from a betting standpoint, they are the favorite, plus 450 right now at DraftKings. I'd be curious if they get blown out by Oregon in week one. Does that number drift at all? So I don't know if you need to bet it right now. They're not going to beat Oregon. I mean, maybe they're close. I don't think this team is as good as the team that almost beat them 2 years ago with, you know, Ashton Genty. No. I agree. They have flaws. I don't love Maddox Madsen. But usually, I think the name brand, the recognition helps them. And also, they tend to be more talented than everybody else in the group of six. So, you know, we'll see. I think James Madison probably takes a little bit of a step back with all the talent they lost to UCLA. Sun Belt Billy does return to his rightful place in the Sun Belt, being their head coach. But, yeah, and the MAC is just never going to be in this discussion. And you mentioned cannibalization of the Mountain West. You know, for me, I think the American kind of does it. I think everybody is kind of in the same bag there. And I think Navy, you know, I know a bunch of folks are really high on Navy this year, and I think they'll be fine, but I don't know if they should be, you know, that short of a shot to make the college football playoff. They lost their quarterback. They lost two pros, one on the offense, one on the defense. So we'll see. But let's jump into the Mountain West. And you mentioned North Dakota State. I want to start there because I think for the Mountain West, and I'm curious your thoughts because you cover this conference more than most. I thought the splintering of this conference was one of the dumbest things that has ever happened. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, you just made one decent, pretty good conference, two mediocre conferences, but, you know, I digress. I thought the fact that they went out and got North Dakota State, Northern Illinois, no thanks, UTEP, whatever, but you go get North Dakota State. They've got a true fan base. They've got history. That being said, JBT, and I think I know where you're headed, there's just an assumption they're going to walk in kind of like, you know, if you want to go way back when Marshall had Randy Moss and they went from the FCS to the FBS and they immediately dominated their conference. I think it was the MAC at the time. And James Madison did so in the Sun Belt. The Mountain West is making them go on the road to Hawaii, on the road to Air Force, on the road to UNLV, on the road to New Mexico. The schedule is really challenging for a team that also lost a pro quarterback.
Yes. To me, that last point is the biggest one. And that was one of my burning questions in the guide. Will the lack of talent from the transfer portal burn the Bison, as I put it? You know, you mentioned it, Caleb McGrath. North Dakota State, when you talk about quarterback, Hayes is going to be the starting quarterback. They had a kid drafted in the fifth round, I think it was. That extends this streak since like 2011 that they have had a quarterback drafted, you know, at some point in the National Football League. So that's a really big blow for them. But to me, it's just him. They didn't reload. You know, you look at all of these teams in the Mountain West that are ahead of them, we'll say, and you look at the transfer talent that they at least tried to bring in, UNLV, New Mexico, all of these teams, right? They're at least trying to supplement some of the losses with some kids that are falling from higher levels for different reasons, but still getting some former four-star guys, getting some former three-star guys, whatever it is. You look at North Dakota State, you lose two first-team all-MVFC offensive linemen. At the FCF level, you know, you can probably just internally promote and continue to dominate, but I don't think that's going to work here at this level. You talk about the transfers they brought in. Of their recruiting class that they brought in 2026, it was 29 high school players, only 9 transfers, 3 of which only played at the Power 4 level, and one of them was a punter, and that's Caleb McGrath, who I was just mentioning right there from Minnesota. So I just don't think that you're going to be able to hit the ground running. I think maybe in the big picture, right, next year, a year after, sure, as your development and your just plan in general with Polasek, the head coach, takes root, then, yeah, that's probably going to be able to work. But right now, just kind of going at it with internal promotion and no real transfers to help beef up the talent level, I think, coupled with the expectation, because they're like the third choice on the board to win the Mountain West, I think that's going to lead to a pretty tough season for North Dakota State. So I thought under 8.5 at a plus price was worth looking at.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how juicy that price plus price was. Yep. So plus 134 at DraftKings right now. As always, I reference that. It's up on my screen here. So JVT, let's look at the, we'll go in order here of the teams from an odds standpoint. And the favorite is UNLV. You hinted at it a little bit. You think good team, but maybe a little bit overrated. What are the flaws this year of this UNLV team? And I guess you start with the fact that they lost the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year, Anthony Calandria, after he said, "I'm not leaving." And then Nebraska said, "Oh, you're not. How about X amount of dollars?" He said, "I'm kidding. I'm leaving." So Jackson Arnold comes in. Look, Dan Mullen, give him credit for this. Wherever he's gone, he's always had quality quarterback play. So Arnold comes in. Where are you on Jackson Arnold? And also, is Alex Orji, who got injured, what, in week 0 last year, week 1, whatever, is he going to be involved in this offense? What have we heard about that?
So I'll say this, that, and this is, you know, being a practice and talking to some folks as well, this has not been announced by any stretch. They are saying it's a competition. Jackson Arnold is going to be the starting quarterback for UNLV. Like, they're in a competition, I'll put in quotes, but it's going to be Arnold who gets this. You know, even for example, Tim, like the other day, I was out of practice. They moved practice tonight on Sunday. Or that day, Orji was running with the ones. By the end of the practice, it was Arnold who was getting some time with the ones too. So I think that we're kind of in the understanding that this is going to be Jackson Arnold's job. And I think that to me is the biggest question. For those who haven't really followed the program, UNLV has had an unprecedented run, especially for the program's history, at quarterback, though. They have not returned a starting quarterback since Doug Brumfield in 2023. They've had 5 quarterbacks that have started over the last 3 years, and yet they've still won 30 games and gone to 3 straight Mountain West Championship games, losing all of them to Boise State. But that, to me, is going to be a pretty big deal. Can you just continue this unprecedented run of success despite the moving chair at quarterback? You mentioned Mullen. He's done pretty good jobs. He took in Anthony Calandria, made him Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year, and then he leaves, as you mentioned, too. But logic would say that at some point that does kind of dry up. You know, Arnold, I think at times watching him, holds on to the ball a little long, and you wonder how that's going to translate here. Calandria held on to the ball too long too, but he at least had the athletic ability to really scramble a ton, run backwards, extend plays. And it's not that Arnold can't, but there's a difference in the type of athlete that I think they are that really helped Calandria extend those plays. And I don't know if Arnold's going to be the same way. I observe that he's more of like a straight line athlete, that he can be pretty good when you run some design runs for him, but not so much at extending some of those plays. So if quarterback's going to struggle, and then you look around at the skill positions, like, this is largely a rebuilt skill position group. They have Jet Thomas, who averaged 7.2 yards per carry, but outside of him, top 3 receivers from last season are all gone. Tayshawn Lyons is the leading returnee at the position. He only had 13 receptions, 222 yards last year. So you're really hoping that a very demure wide receiver room, there's some big guys, but there's a lot of 5'9 guys in there that are really going to maybe make this offense work. And that, to me, is the big question. And I would add this to UNLV too. And I mentioned this when we were talking earlier. They swore up and down that because Paul Gunther got a late start as defensive coordinator, that was the reason why they weren't good defensively. Well, now you don't have that excuse here, right? Gunther's been there now since last year, and this is a group that finished 104th in the country in opponent EPA per play. They give them 6.4 yards per play, 5.2 yards per carry. I get that they have this full offseason, but with this insanely challenging schedule and I think some real questions at quarterback and the overall depth of the position, under 8.5, it's like minus 180. It was a hard win total to play because it's like really heavily juiced either over or under. But I think I'd rather go under and expect that. I think a perfect year for UNLV is going to be 8-4.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the schedule. It's funny. I'm glad you mentioned it, challenging schedule, because I think there's going to be people who look at it and say, well, they don't have that typical bye game, right? UNLV has gone to Michigan, has gone to Notre Dame, has played the big boy, gotten their paycheck, gotten their ass kicked. But, like, you got to go to Hawaii, which is a conference game, but that's after playing a really good Memphis team, as we discussed in the last segment. And you also have at Air Force, you got at New Mexico, you have Cal coming to Allegiant Stadium in early October with a pretty good quarterback and JKS. Who knows what they're going to look like? So I agree. Mm-hmm. I think the schedule is certainly challenging there. So let's get to that week one game. I keep saying that, against Hawaii. You know, this is a team in Hawaii that obviously we talk about a lot. We got some news regarding Hawaii here we'll tell you about in a moment. But, you know, they bring back Micah Elejato. They did lose a bunch of talent at the wide receiver position. And then the injury news of Pafeli Ashlock is not ideal, obviously. But I do think, and you asked me about this on Money Moves earlier this week, I think the system is just kind of plug and play, and they did bring in some talent from the transfer portal. The defense, I think, should be better. You're pretty bullish on the Bows. Is it because of the price out there, or do you really buy in on Timmy Chang's squad winning the Mountain West this year?
I think it's both. I also would add a third reason. Bishop Gorman alum, Micah Elejato. I, of course, went to Bishop Gorman High School, for those who don't
know.
Their
whole team is like Bishop. They got like seven Bishop Gorman dudes on the team.
Hell yeah. Gorman to Hawaii Pipeline, which, hey, it isn't bad if you're Timmy Chang, because they got some talented kids.
It's a lot better than my high school, The Heights, that doesn't have a football program. So, you know.
That's right. Some people are turning that pipeline off. They're like, come on, please. We don't need it anymore. No, but I do think it starts with Elejato, and I'm kind of a believer. You know, I saw, and this is not a shot. He does great work over, I think it's at Action Network, but over there does college football stuff for him. But the way he phrased it the other day was, Micah Elejato hasn't proven that he can stay healthy. And my response wanted to be like, well, yeah, but he's only played 1 year. And, like, you know, I guess he missed, what is it, Portland State and Sam Houston State with the injury. He kind of gutted through it and played the rest of those games, including an ass kicking out there against Brent Brennan in the Arizona Wildcats. So
that was a horrible spot.
It was brutal. But I do think he's proven to be a pretty good quarterback. Despite the fact that he had this nagging ankle injury, he completed 66% of his passes, 3,100 yards, 24 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions. And I noted this in the guide. He was never really a dual threat at Gorman, but over his last 2 years, 614 yards on the ground, 6 touchdowns, he has the ability to stretch plays out and at least run for a little bit. And so if he's now a little bit healthier in the lower body, another year in the system with Timmy Chang, which is very high floor if you're a good enough quarterback, I think this offense, even with the loss of Ashlock, is going to be really, really good. You talk about home field advantage. Hawaii's got one of the stronger ones in the conference, if not the strongest one. And then the trips that these teams have to make. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the brutal schedule for North Dakota State. All the big boys got to go out to the island. UNLV, New Mexico, North Dakota State, they all got to go out there. I think that's a benefit for them. If you're going to have to face all of the teams projected to be ahead of you, you might as well host them as opposed to going out there to play them in conference. And I think this team is really set up, and we should give Chang some credit. We know him as a legendary Hawaii guy in the offense and the quarterback. They've steadily improved under him and defensively. Every single year, they have statistically gotten better with Chang out there. You retain defensive coordinator for a second season at Dennis Thurman. I think they're going to be at least competent enough to be a team that, with a strong home advantage, with a strong home schedule, that you have the ability to get stack some wins and a good quarterback who's going to be healthier and better, that I think they're going to be a team. So when I played it, it was 6-1. The market's corrected itself a little bit now. It's now like plus 480. I still think that you could argue that they should be on par odds-wise with a UNLV, New Mexico, all these teams. So I think that it's still worth playing there. But yes, I believe in Hawaii this year.
Well, and you mentioned it, since Timmy Chang has gotten there, and people have heard me mention this, but it bears repeating for this discussion, they're the best cover team in college football at home. since 2022. I mean, they're 21-6-1 ATS. I don't think that includes the Hawaii Bowl that they won and covered against Cal. You get UNLV, you get New Mexico, you get North Dakota State, you avoid Air Force, which I think is a tricky one. We'll talk about Air Force here in a moment. It's all about, can you win on the road? And that's been a challenge. They debunked a little bit of that last year, won some road games, beat Colorado State, who I know was down. They beat Air Force. You know, can you win, you know, at Wyoming, at NIU, at UTEP? You're playing the worst teams on the road, which is, is beneficial, obviously, for your bet right there. So, you know, we'll see them. And by the way, might as well mention our news right now. Last year, we were able to go out there to do some live shows, and we're hitting the road again. I know they're gone week zero, but we're going to hang out with Coach Chang and catch some practices. We're going to do a live VSiN primetime Wednesday, August 26th, live from Hawaii. And then we're going to do this very podcast on Thursday, August 27th, me and Matt Heumann. So we're headed back out to the islands. Thanks to our friends at Rainbow Authentics for sponsoring the trip. So we'll be back out there, excited to do it and be out in the islands yet again. And so many of us bettors, JVT, love to bet those late night games. And it'll be nice to see some of those games on actual terrestrial television. We won't have to do the Mountain West app for all of them. That UNLV game will be 10 o'clock Eastern on the CW. North Dakota State game, I think, will be midnight Eastern on the CW. So that'll be nice to have that. All right, let's get to
4-point dogs, by the way, to Stanford, right, to start the year. So that's going to be a fun game. I don't want to my judgment to be clouded, but I'll take four.
I don't know. I haven't gotten there yet. I think I'll have to have Hawaii there. I do worry about, like, you got the revenge factor. I think they're, you know, Stanford's certainly more bigger up front, as we saw
shadow
a year
coach
ago.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, Tavita Pritchard, excuse me, former quarterback from Stanford, first time head coach. Let's get to New Mexico, because, you know, last year Boise wins the conference, and I don't know what you were thinking. I thought New Mexico was the best team in the conference by the end of the season, and they didn't end up because of tiebreakers getting into the championship game. They lose their bowl game to Minnesota, really entertaining bowl game. They won that regular season finale against San Diego State, and, you know, they keep their head coach. When you kind of have this run, usually you lose your head coach. They keep their head coach. His son is still there, a stud linebacker. New Mexico right now is the second shot to win this conference, JVT, and their win total is sitting at 7.5, heavily juiced over, 8.5 juiced under. Where are you on this New Mexico team when it comes to the odds and your perception of them in 26?
I think that they are more flawed than people think they are. One of the points that I had made in the guide was, you know, it's easy to use a cliche to be, not easy, but it's better to be the hunter than the hunted, right? And this is going to be a year in which New Mexico now has expectations and is not going to surprise anybody. And one of the stats that I think points that out is, if you go back to last year, Tim, as I went back and looked, they closed as a favorite in 6 games, but they just went 3-3 straight up. They only covered one of those games. So they did not fare well in the role of favorite a season ago. They were much better when they were the underdog and not expected to do that much. And I think there's some real questions about health. I expect that he's probably going to be ready, but I don't know if people understand that Jack Lane is kind of beat up, dude. Like, he tore his elbow up right before, I believe it was their bowl game last year. He missed the spring recovering from a torn flexor tendon in that throwing elbow. And he already wasn't really a dominant quarterback to begin with. He was good, but he threw for less than 2,500 yards, 13 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, only averaged 7.6 yards per attempt. Good, not great numbers. They've got some talent there, including this kid from Oregon they brought in, Luke Moga, who apparently dazzled in the spring. So I think there's more flux at quarterback than we like to think. I think Lane might come in, but if that arm's not healthy, you know, we saw like Carson Beck kind of noodle arm it through a season last year, and he had an elbow injury. What does that do for a guy that wasn't even anywhere near as effective as Beck was when he was at the peak of his powers? And then the other part of this is, you question whether or not the defense is going to be any better. They've got 6 starters coming back from last year. And of course, you have the preseason Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year in Jaxton Beck. But outside of that, this is a team that really didn't grade out pretty well defensively when you look at what they were, right? 19th percentile in non-explosive EPA per play, 36th percentile in late down success rate. So if they continue to struggle with the expectations now, right, as a favorite, if this defense is largely what it was last year, and if Jack Lane is not as healthy, I think that this is a team that has a few more flaws than we think that they do. And it leads me again to the point of all these teams kind of cannibalizing each other. So I went under 8.5. Again, this is one of those tricky win totals where it's like 8.5 shaded to the under at minus 180, or 7.5 shaded to the over at minus 180. So kind of pick your poison. But the schedule is pretty challenging. You got to go to Oklahoma, Hawaii, Wyoming. They got to host UNLV and North Dakota State as well as Air Force. Those are a lot of coin flip games that you need to go the right way. And I just don't know if that's going to be the case.
Let's get to the Air Force Falcons. About a month ago on this podcast, I gave out Air Force win total over. And then when I opened up that beautiful college football betting guide, which is available now over at VSiN.com, I saw a win total from you, best bet, Air Force over. I didn't write it up for the guide because I just have a pet peeve of giving out the number that I didn't sure. bet. But it's still 6.5. You got to lay some juice. But man, I really like this Air Force team. I know they've been down the last 2 years. They don't play a Power Four opponent. They do obviously play Army and Navy, who are believed to be two of the better G6 teams. But you look at the schedule, they get North Dakota State at home. They yep. avoid Hawaii. They get UNLV at home. They do play New Mexico, but that's the last game of the season on the road. They get a revenge game against UConn that I think they'll take care of business in the non-con on Halloween. So I really like this Air Force team. You know, I know they've been down under Troy Calhoun these last 2 years, but I bet over 6.5. And, you know, I think you are even a little more aggressive than I am with their win total.
Yeah, 7.5 over minus plus 120. I think that's absolutely it. You know, we've talked about a couple of these teams now. What if I'm right about North Dakota State not really being that good, right? Then all of a sudden that becomes a more winnable game in terms of your probability. I don't know how you feel about this sort of dynamic, but yeah, you have to face New Mexico on the road. Is Albuquerque a home field advantage? Like, I'm sorry, but yeah, I know they're better. Having said that, that's kind of like an empty void out there at Albuquerque when you're talking about making the road trip out there. I don't think it's the most daunting trip to make. And then look at the other games that they have here. Duquesne, UConn, San Jose State, UTEP. They're all winnable opportunities for Air Force and an offense that I think is going to be arguably the best in the conference. They were one of the most efficient offenses in the country last year. It's just that their defense was the complete polar opposite and one of the least efficient defenses in the country. You bring in some old faces to help run your defense. I think that's what's going to really help Calhoun here. If you look, one of the guys that they bring in, Steve Russ, defensive coordinator, was actually on the staff, go back from 2014 to like 2017. So you have some familiarity there. Russ knows what he wants to do defensively. There's some returning production. You get your 8 of your top 9 tacklers and tackles for loss leader Isaac Hubert back. So that's going to really help you too. There's nowhere to go but up for the defense. And I know that the offense is going to be great with Zarka back at quarterback. Couple that with the schedule. And if you're going to make a bet with, because this is what I keep telling people, Tim, the Pofelli-Ashlock thing is enough for me that, look, I'm already in on Hawaii, that I wouldn't really recommend it if you didn't want to get in late on a lesser price. But Air Force, I think I would not be surprised if Air Force were to win the Mountain West at all, because I think that they really do have some strong upside. And I truly believe that a lot of these teams are really close to one another.
Air Force to reach the Mountain West championship game is 3-1.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of an interesting look too. You know, if you don't love them to win at all, do you bet them to reach the championship? That's a market at DraftKings. All right, before we wrap up here, JBT, we didn't mention the so-called cellar dwellers of this conference, kind of like what we did to wrap up the SEC. One of those teams that you're higher on, and that would be the likes of Nevada, Northern Illinois, San Jose State, UTEP and Wyoming, and one team that you're really, really concerned about this year.
Okay, I'll keep it in state. I'm oddly intrigued by Nevada this year, I hate to say. You look at them defensively, and we know what Choate's background is. He's a defensive guy coming from Texas when he took the job. But they do have some pretty interesting pieces. You've got a couple of preseason defensive guys on this team. Dylan LaBarbera, I always have trouble with that name. Aiden Walker, two preseason all-conference selections. Linebacker E.J. Smith back after an early injury, ended his season last year. I kind of like this under Choate. They've actually allowed fewer points in yards per game as well as yards per play each year under Choate, so they've steadily improved. So defensively, they've got something going here. And the question is, what are they going to be on offense? They've got some interesting things going, though. I mean, they did have, or they went to the transfer portal. For those who remember, Luke Duncan, who played at UCLA as part of this quarterback room. The large expectation is that he's going to win the job. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones or anything, Tim, but I believe that Sir Dunk here should be able to take this job and kind of lead them at least to some form of just competency at quarterback. I don't need him to be incredible. I just need you to go out there and help an offense, which finished 114th in passing success rate. And the running game, they've kind of invested in the offensive line a bit here. They've got some guys coming back, including preseason all-conference left tackle Jack Foster. So I think there's some pieces that if you squint really hard like I am right now because I don't have my glasses on, you can at least see a team that is going to cover some numbers and be kind of feisty. Will they get over their win total? I recommended over 4.5 at plus 120, but I think it's going to be more of like a game-to-game ATS type of deal for me with Nevada. And Mike Montesano, who does some stuff for us over at VSiN, is always appearing. He posted his bottom 25 in power ratings, and Nevada was there. And I tweeted at him. I was like, I'm kind of intrigued by that team, and I think they might be undervalued. And that's just one point of evidence that I think, at the very least, a lot of people that are respected somewhat low on Nevada. And if I'm right, and I'm a little bit higher on them, then they at least could be a pretty good profit for you betting on them game to game. And then I'll mention really quickly the team I'm positive on. I will be upset if I'm wrong here, because I've been burned by them before. I'm not the biggest Jay Sauvel guy, but Wyoming does have some stuff here that I think is going to be pretty good for them. They're installing a whole new offense. Last year, they were absolutely awful, but Christian Taylor comes in to run the offense. He was most recently with the Buffalo Bills, but had time at William & Mary. They bring in a William & Mary transfer, a quarterback, Tyler Hughes. He's a dual-threat kid, a little bit more athletic, so you're going to have a different dynamic on offense than generally you have. And then Sauvel's got at least a lot of guys that are going to help him. He doesn't have a ton of returning starters on defense, but as Phil Steele put it, 77% of this roster is homegrown. So there's a lot of guys that have been in the program that have been playing under Sauvel. If there was a year that you were going to be a little bit better, I think Wyoming might be the team that I am potentially wrong on, and that the more I've thought about it, the more I've come more around on them. I did recommend under 5.5 on the win total, but I think that I could end up being wrong, and this is a bowl team in that range of like 6 wins if the offense hits.
Jonathan Von Tobel, you can catch him weekdays on Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni. By the way, shouts to Stormy, her new crew on ESPN. Bob Wischusen and Louis Riddick. So moving up in the world is our own Stormy Bonatoni. JVT does a show with her every weekday. And then Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss as well. JVT, great stuff, man. We appreciate it. And talk to you soon.
Yep, you got it, buddy. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Jonathan Von Tobel. That's going to do it for this episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to our producer, Rick. Thanks to Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan Hunter. I'm Tim Murray. Once again, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.